Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. This is a special daily editorial going out on August long weekend up here in Canada. So no trading in the Canadian stocks on this Monday, but Shad and I are chatting with Doc Jim Jones, private investor, regular guest on this show, and I know a lot of our listeners already follow you on some of the other metals-focused blogs. Now, Doc Jones, look, we've talked a lot about in the last couple months just how slow the markets are. And unfortunately, in the last 11, almost 12 months now, the pretty much bear market action that we have seen in especially precious metal stocks, where good news sometimes is simply a liquidity event to get sold. And if it isn't good news, and boy, oh boy, some of the stocks can just continue to drift lower. And sometimes we've even seen some fishing line sell-offs in some of these stocks. So Doc Jones, when it comes to portfolio management right now, in a time when you can make an argument that it's a bear market for these stocks and simply slow trading, what have you been doing with your portfolio?
Hi, Corey. Thanks for having me back. I've been scaling out of positions and tightening up my portfolio and focusing on those companies that have projects that are economic as is and have the opportunity to expand those projects. Yeah, it's been a broad bear market, but I've done well just by the nature of applying my philosophy. It seems that I think what investors need to understand is that the easy money was made a year and a half ago, where you could buy anything carelessly without doing your research and probably make a good profit on it because of the rising gold price and the enthusiasm out there. But right now, and I see going forward, you really have to focus on the companies that have competent management teams, cashed up, and projects that have a mineable resource that's economic at below the current prices, like 1500 gold, copper at, you know, 350 versus using the spot today. Yeah, so that's where I'm at. I've been selectively cutting and focusing in, which I tend to do. My portfolio now has gone from 15 companies down to seven that I'm holding, all of which have a underlying resource that I can quantify as having a value and the type of projects that a major would possibly acquire or that they could contemplate putting into production themselves.
Well, Doc Jones, that's a good strategy to have. And there's a lot of investors that, you know, chase the drill plays and they want to see that discovery story. And there's definitely stocks that can run if they hit an eye-popping result or if there's a lot of enthusiasm behind a certain narrative. But I like your approach to looking at companies that have, you know, valuation metrics that you can run on the assets they have in the ground or secondary projects. But are you looking at a certain sector right now, like a commodity, or are you looking at more of like a company that has growth potential 18 months out, 2 years out that you want to get in early? Or are you looking at something that has a catalyst coming up in a shorter term, like maybe a quarterly catalyst or something by the end of the year? What is your strategy as far as when you're tightening up your portfolio? What kind of catalyst are you looking for in these companies?
Ideally, I'm focusing on companies that have a hybrid discovery developer model because then they get the re-rate quite quickly as they expand the resource and show the market that when they do their feasibility study or PEA, that this will be a highly profitable mine and that has the possible scale that would attract a major, and that they already are all cashed up and they won't be going to the market for a very long time to raise capital. So any new resource that is added to the current resource will be reflected in the share price. Examples of which, like Amerita Resources, fits that model where they have a historic resource as is that could be a mine, and then there's vast opportunities to expand that, and they're cashed up with over $25 million in the bank, and they just added a second drill, so they got a lot of news flow that's going to come out. Same with Big Ridge Gold that recently completed a financing, as well as they called in all the outstanding warrants that they had in from a previous financing. So now they've got close to $12 million in cash and net to them 1 million ounces of that's underground mineable. It's economic as is. They could basically contemplate a feasibility study right now, but they're going to expand that. So in that case, we're on net, if fully diluted, they're being valued at like $16 an ounce of something that is economically mineable. And their nearest competitor, Manador Resources, is being valued at $100 an ounce. So there's a lot of upside there. The important thing is not having to go back to the market again in a long time. So that's kind of where I'm focusing in. It's hard for me to justify just investing in pure greenfields exploration when there's so much out there already that has been de-risked, that is trading at pretty much historic lows for the last decade. Especially in that time, the gold price has gone up quite a bit, and margins on each one of those ounces or pounds, whatever commodity you're dealing with, has expanded drastically. I'm more interested in the base metal complex at this point that has precious metal credits, but selected gold companies. Like, I hold three gold companies, two which have a historic resource and one that is exploration, but that Volcanic Gold is headed by Simon Ridgway, and it's a very tight share structure, and half their market cap is basically cash, and they just made a discovery and no one cared. So I'm comfortable with that. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Hey, fair enough, right? Tight share structures, good management, cash in the bank. Those are key fundamentals for any company. But let's also talk about that whole strategy of, if we both agree that the last 12 months have been a bear market for these stocks. Now, I know that's in the context of a larger bull market, but after a bear market, don't we usually simply see the producers, the larger companies, start to move first? Why not focus there?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's going to be the trajectory going forward. It's like, it's a reset. Basically, I think we'll see the producers and then the developers. And then finally, the greenfields will get the bump. The reason why I don't go into the producers is because there's, in my opinion, you get limited upside. They've maintained a lot of their share price gains in the last year and a half, whereas your developers and your explorer developers have depreciated compared to them. So I generally, when I invest, I want to see at least 3 to 5x over the next year to 18 months. As far as within my thesis, it's justifiable to take that kind of risk and also to have that kind of focus on that company, because I don't buy a whole lot of them. I keep a very small, tight portfolio, and in doing so, I have to have a downside hedge. And at this point in the cycle, that downside hedge would be the mineable resource, not just a resource, a mineable resource. I hear this all the time, and I wish investors would pay more attention that in situ resource in general doesn't mean it's mineable. Like, when I talk about a in situ resource, like, I have my free research I put out on Amerita Resources, I only talk about, when I say the in situ resource, I'm talking about, and I put in there, I'm only talking about the actual economically mineable resource right now. Nobody cares about a company and shouldn't value a company at, you know, $50 an ounce. Let's say you have a company that's got 10 million ounces of gold in the ground. Well, it shouldn't be valued at, you know, $50 million market cap if those ounces are at 0.1 grams per ton, and you need $5,000 gold and $2 billion of CapEx to build the mine. So people should only deal with what is actually economic currently. You know, these optionality plays are really tricky, and So the reason why I don't go into the producers is because a lot of the gains have been kept, and I want more upside. And the developers explorer model certainly pays well, because you have the downside hedge of the resource that is currently as is, could be a mine, and then you have the upside of it expanding to where it's attractive to a major or mid-tier producer to acquire it, because it's along far enough where they could go directly into a PEA or a pre-feasibility study. And then you get the multiple applied to each one of those pounds or ounces, whichever commodity they're dealing with. And then you get the re-rate from the explorer to the developer in the share price.
Well, Doc, let me just throw a wild card at you here, because I agree with a lot of what you're saying as far as the, you know, sometimes those developer that had the exploration upside. We just had Jordan Royburn on the show, and he called that the Holy Grail. But he extended his Holy Grail to producers that also have exploration upside that can still move the market, and listed a couple companies off like Kirkland Lake, that when they made their big discovery at Fosterville, even though they're a producer, they went up tenfold after that. Westome hit at depth and has gone up about tenfold after that. K92 Mining was in production. They made a discovery right next to their deposit that they could incorporate into the mill, and they were a 10 bagger from there. So I would push back and say there's a plenty of producers that can still have those multi-bagger moves as long as they also have that exploration and expansion component. And we saw that in 2016 in the big run, that a lot of the biggest movers were actually the producers that actually held onto their gains better than the developers and explorers in the bear market in 2013, 14, 15. The developers, explorers got crushed to nothing because there was no money in the space, but the producers came back. So wouldn't you still say that there still is upside in the producers if they have that exploration component to them where that could still move the needle?
Well, what I would say to that is I agree with you. Yes, of course. Yeah, if you can find a producer that has an exploration potential, then yeah, great. Yeah, because then you've got cash flow coming in. The thing about that, it's not easy to find, and a lot of them are already have that price built into it because their market caps are generally, you know, over 500 million, a billion in those cases, that it takes a lot of ounces to be discovered to move the needle. So something that has a 50 or 100 million market cap can easily go to 500 million or go 5x with 10, 20,000 meters of drilling when they can bring in a large inferred resource into the resource table. But yeah, they're out there, and you're right. At the beginning of the cycle, there a lot of it was the producers and the late stage developers that went 10x a year and a half, 2 years ago, because they were left for dead as well. But at this point, because this is the second wave of that same cycle in the bear market we've experienced over the last, 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, the producers did maintain a lot of their gains in comparison to those developers and developer explorers. So I just see more potential there. And for me, because the type of research that I do, that I have to have access to the company, to the CEO and to members of the board, if I need generally those larger companies, with multi-billion dollar market caps, unless I was in on the ground floor or years ago, it's hard for me to get any meetings with them. And as well with the smaller companies, I tend to take 1-3% ownerships in the companies. And that's a lot harder for me to do when, 1-3%, I'm looking at putting in, $30, $40 million of my own money into a large company. That's just not feasible for me at this point. So whereas a smaller company that, has a $50 million market cap, I can easily come in and take 1-3% and then get a seat at the table.
Well, just one more quick question, Doc Jones. On the developer side of things, I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's a lot of companies that have put out economic studies, maybe a PEA, maybe a PFS, mm-hmm. sometimes even a feasibility study, yeah. And their market caps don't seem to move much even after they put out this economic study that in past cycles would have caused the company to have a re-rating. They would have said, oh wow, analysts would look at it. So what do you make of that, where we see some explorers with no resources, no economic studies, with 300, 400, 500 million market caps, even up to $1 billion market caps, but then we see these developers that are not getting much love? Some of them have massive drill programs, they've updated their resources, and it's not moving the needle. What do you make of that, and when do you think that that's what will start running? Is that kind of the point you're making, that some of those will eventually catch a bid in this next cycle?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that, other than retail investors tend to lose money in the long term, so they chase the wrong things.
So true, right? That whole euphoria kicks in, that whole investor psychology that it's just going to keep moving higher, even though the valuation doesn't make sense.
Yeah. When you get to a company and you can simply model what the possible bullish upside of the resource is. For example, a company you model and you go, yeah, they could maybe at the most have, 5 million ounces there, and the market cap is 1.5 billion. You're like, it's being valued at $300 an ounce that hasn't been officially defined yet. That's just crazy, right? Like that doesn't make sense. But we've seen this a lot, where companies will unjustifiably put on multiple X's of their share price, only to be back down to where they were within 6 to 8 months or a year later. Whereas the other companies that Shad was referring to that have a legitimate PEA and whatnot, they tend to have less volatility on the downside and will continue to march forward and march up as long as we don't get like a global depression in commodity prices. Patience is the one of the attributes that most investors lack, and that's where people lose money. You know, they you've got to be willing to hold something for at least, you know, 6 months to 2 years, and be able to weather the price going down 30 or 40% from your first purchase, you know, and be prepared to add to it and average down or average up depending on the data that comes out.
Yeah, that just all ties into having a strategy, right? When investing in a stock, have a strategy and understand if you're a short-term trader or a long-term trader. A lot of people say that they're long-term traders, but then short-term moves throw them completely off course. So it's one of those things. Understand your strategy and stick to it, and understand that when you are a long-term trader, even if you're a short-term trader, you're going to have losses. It's about limiting some of those losses and understanding when stories change and when it's right to bail. But I think overall, Doc, your comments on tightening up your portfolio right now are important for investors to take note of, because I think that is the right strategy when we are in times like this. Trading is slow and stocks have drifted broadly, all of them lower. Doc Jones, it's great chatting with you, buddy. I really appreciate your time on our show. We'll chat again with you in a couple weeks. And in the meantime, I hope you have a great long weekend. And hey, we'll chat in a couple weeks.
Sounds great, Corey.